every show, we feel very fortunate to go inside the Beltway to get the buzz on what's happening from Washington that will filter down into your backyards. And a pleasure to welcome to the show Talk Radio News' Ellen Ratner. She's the bureau chief, and we've had her on many, many, many times here on America Tonight. Ellen, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing okay, and actually, Kate, when I am gone, which I'm pretty much going to be gone, I may be able to call you from Sudan and from Kenya, because the time is it's 8 hours. So if I get up at 5 a.m, I will give you a call. And what's really interesting about all of this is, in fact, just how amazing it's going to be for me to be in this brand new country. But you're not going to have much of me. So we have a great, very cool guy named Ken Bazinet. He was a White House correspondent for 20 years.
I remember Ken Bazinet. I think he got some tube time. I think I remember seeing him talk about a lot of things that were going on. Certainly I've read him, but I thought I saw him on the tube as well.
He's been around.
Yeah, I like that.
He's an oldie but goodie.
All right, well, we like oldies but goodies, definitely. Hey, speaking of oldies but goodies, and we can't wait to hear about your trip, by the way, what's the deal with Huntsman? The former Utah governor announces he's in. What do you think will happen?
Well, you know, he's got a lot of money to run, but to a lot of people, he is much more acceptable, adaptable than Mitt Romney, and that's really what they're going to be putting up with. But the issue is whether he can get the money that Mitt Romney has. And in a debate, I'm sure they're going to point to the press credentials. I mean, not the press credentials, the credentials, the financial credentials have been given and that Mitt Romney has. That's going to be very hard to beat.
Yeah. If he got the nomination, like you said, hard to beat, but if he gets the nomination, who's the running mate, do you think, if we wanted to just kind of speculate?
Oh, a lot of people think it could be a Michelle Bachmann.
Oh, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. There you go, because Tea Party.
How's that for a ticket?
Yeah. Then you get the Tea Party, darling. You get the whole thing. You get that would be interesting if that was the ticket. Absolutely. Ooh, I love this as we speculate as to what could possibly happen. Speaking of that, what's going on with the Libyan mission and the vote on whether to suspend or not?
Things make strange bedfellows, and we have a very strange bedfellow in terms of none other than Mr. McCain and Mr. Kerry, both presidential nominees at one point in their life. So they are been very, very active here. And I think that we have a situation where the two of them, have gotten together and they have decided what's going to be what. And they think that that the president ought to be given 1 year to decide what's going to happen in Libya.
All right, 1 year.
Free range. And don't forget, tomorrow night, just about the time you're on the air, starting on the air, actually, it'll just have passed, the president giving the speech on what has happened and what he's going to be doing in Afghanistan. Expected a 10,000-person troop pullout of the surge.
Ooh, 10,000, because I heard the number might be higher. 10,000 would be
30,000 over a period of time, 10,000 initially.
Yeah, wow. And that would happen in the next month or so, I assume.
That's what we're looking at.
Ooh. All right, so that's tomorrow, as Ellen said. Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News, as always, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for popping on.
Thank you.
All right, Afghanistan is still the big story, naturally, because we've spent a lot of money, a lot of lives have gone into the effort there. Coming up later this hour, we'll chat with Jeff Atticott, our terrorism expert here for America Tonight, about the Afghanistan pullout and the number of troops that will leave, whether this is a good thing, a bad thing, or somewhere in the middle. He has some strong thoughts on this, having been there a few times as well. And also Pakistan, what's happening in Pakistan and the situation in Libya. As I've said many times, you got to take Gaddafi out. End of story. At this point, there is so much burden on the back of the United States. When we keep hearing, well, it's really NATO and we're just a chunk of NATO, let's be honest about it. We are really the biggest chunk of NATO. We can put any percentage on it, any fraction we want on it. It doesn't matter. If you talk to anyone who knows anything about what's going on with any of those NATO troops, the majority relate to America. The majority of NATO is America. So in Libya, our chips are absolutely all over the table. And what would be so awful about taking Gaddafi out? And, of course, that's what they're trying to do at this point. They've hit grandchildren and everybody else. They just can't get the target. So he is the target. Essentially, they can't get him at this point. So we'll talk to Atticott about that as well. Also coming up, we've got sports shorts. Wimbledon is on, game on, and a couple of Americans are faring well. Serena Williams, one of the best female players of all time, almost on her deathbed, has been out of tennis for 11 months. She's back. She wins her first round match. So we'll talk about Wimbledon. Also, the bigger story, come on, guys. We all love the NFL. What will Sundays be like with no NFL? Is the league close to a new deal, or is it just conversation? I believe we will still miss at least a few games, but I think that the billionaires and the millionaires understand that this would not be good for the great game of football if it's punted for a season. When so many people are struggling to put food on the table, keep a roof over their head, make a living, it's hard to sympathize when you hear about the division of revenue being the kick that is separating the people who have gobs of money, meaning the players and the owners. So that's coming up as well. Plus the TSA, no grope, no thank you. That's what they're saying in Texas. And now there are some other states who are rearing up as well and deciding that they don't want to play the game with the TSA anymore because of some of the things that have happened, for example, to some children who have gone through. I think one of the best examples was the four-year-old who didn't understand, had to spread out her arms, didn't understand why she was being touched, thought she had done something wrong, got hysterical at the gate, just a sad piece of video to see that went viral. It was all over the internet, and that sparked so much outrage. I think that's led to some of the things that were that are going on with the intrusive searches and Michigan deciding, you know what, we're going to criminalize those kind of searches by airport screeners. But will, in the end, Texas and Michigan be able to push through the no-grope measures that they want to? And the TSA, in the meantime, is getting ready for 8,000 different screenings, not airports, but on buses and ferries and trains. They're saying even cars and trucks will be part of that. And we've talked about this before. So we will dive into the TSA and the no grope, because I know that many of you get enraged when you hear some of the stories that seem to center around the airport, but what happens if your daily commute, you have to go through a TSA screening? Can you imagine that? Coming up next, though, we're lightening the load with me, Kate Delaney, here on America Tonight. We're going to talk about chocolate, specifically Willy Wonka, 40th anniversary. Stephen Showhead, our movie man on the West Coast, round the bend.
GCN listeners, why have you been hearing so much about Dermatol, the all-natural, all-purpose first aid spray? Because it's the must-have first aid product you need in your preparedness kit. Dermatol is made in America by Americans who know there's a more affordable, natural way to treat cuts, burns, bites, rashes, shingles, boils, and many other skin problems. Dermatol is gentle enough for diaper rash, powerful enough for bed sores, and harmless to the eyes and mouth. It's great for the whole family, even your family pets. Dermatol is antimicrobial, antifungal, antiviral, and not diminished by freezing, extreme heat, or years in storage. Dermatol is an absolute must for any first aid or preparedness kit. Dermatol's soothing, rapid restoration of injured skin is so effective, it's guaranteed. Order yours today. Call 800-217-6677. 800-217-6677. That's 800-217-6677. Efficient, economical, effective. Spray it all with Dermatol.
Again, the Congressional Budget Office sounds the alarm. This time warns of Greek-style U.S. debt crises. You heard me right. The GAO is drawing a parallel between the U.S. economy, its debt, and the current Greek economic meltdown. With the debt-to-GDP chart climbing into unfamiliar territory, the growing budget deficit will rise to unsupportable levels. Hi, this is Ted Anderson. The Federal Debt and Risk of Financial Crises document the CBO has published is a must-read for every American. Covering the risk of continued deficit spending coupled with an aging population and the rising interest rates spell economic disaster. It's imperative that you get a copy of this document and study it for yourself. Call me today at 800-686-2237, and I'll send you a free copy. Again, call 800-686-2237 and ask for your copy of the CBO document. Once again, you need to read this government report. Call 800-686-2237.
Are you a leader or board member of a newer nonprofit? Then you're building your nonprofit while wondering, are we doing this right? Well, stop wondering and start listening. Tune into WebTalkRadio.net and Nonprofit Spark to hear nuts and bolts advice about fundraising, planning, finances, and more. The conversations are geared to newer leaders like you. So boost your nonprofit know-how and confidence. Tune into WebTalkRadio.net and Nonprofit Spark today.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? They've been available since 1986, yet the financial industry won't recognize the value of gold for your retirement. Gold has outperformed paper investments, yet no word about IRAs. If you would like to have gold for your retirement, call 800-686-2237. Don't get left behind by rising inflation and low returns. Call 800-686-2237. Secure your future and call 1-800-686-2237.
Oompa, Loompa, Doompa-dee-doo, I've got another puzzle for you. Oompa, Loompa, Doompa-dee-dee, if you are wise, you'll listen to me. Who do you blame when your kid is up? Rat pampered and spoiled like a Siamese. Cat blaming the kids is a lie and a shame. You know exactly who's to blame. The mother and the father. Oompa, Loompa, Doompa-dee-da.
All right, who doesn't know that song? Come on, I know you know it. Willy Wonka, yeah, the Chocolate Factory. Well, here we are talking movies with Stephen Shohat and a big anniversary for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Stephen, as always, fun to have you on the show. Thanks for being aboard.
Hey, thanks, Kate. Yeah, 40 years, and they had no idea at the time. I mean, it got a great review from Roger Ebert saying it was the best movie of its kind since The Wizard of Oz, but it was a box office flop when it came out.
It was a box office. What did they attribute that to? Because it sparkled, it sizzled, it had funny characters, it just was ahead of its time. I don't know.
Yeah, the director, Mel Stewart, said it was all about the marketing. One of the things that might have hurt it was Roald Dahl, the writer, was bad-mouthing it. Roald Dahl had originally written the book back in 1964, and it was actually based when he was a kid in England, Cadbury Chocolates used to send samples to his school, and then the kids had to write opinions about it. And then there were all these rumors about the Cadbury company having spies and spying on other companies and things like that. So that's what inspired the book, and the filmmakers felt they had to change a lot of things for the movie. Now if you ever see the book, the illustrations of Willy Wonka, he's got a beard, and so I think Roald Dahl was thinking about either the actor Spike Milligan or the actor Ron Moody, who played Fagin in Oliver. But neither one of them were available to do it, or Ron Moody, in his case, he turned it down. So I think he was a little unhappy with Gene Wilder. You know, Gene Wilder, he got the role. He said, I want to limp, and then I want to do a somersault. And because that way, for the rest of the movie, the audience won't know whether I'm lying or not. And the director, Mel Stewart, was so impressed that he gave him the part based on that. And I don't know why it didn't take off. I mean, I really loved it when I was a kid, but you know, there wasn't as many cable outlets back then, so there was a delay from having it fail in the movie theaters to the time when it was regularly showing on television and regularly appearing as a, or being available as a VCR. So that's when it really started to really go.
Yeah, so years later is when it took off, which we see
sometimes. Yeah, 78, about 7 years later, yeah.
Yeah, which we see sometimes with films. You know how The Wizard of Oz, of course, I'm comparing different films, but how every year you see the showing of The Wizard of Oz, for a long time, and you know this, Stephen, we would see the Chocolate Factory, we'd see Willy Wonka. Every year it would have there'd be a yearly showing before the advent of cable. And so maybe slowly it started to creep into the consciousness of people.
It's exactly what happened. And you know, you have the five kids. They never really did much afterwards. The girl who played Veruca Salt was probably the best actress in it because she, according to all the reports, and she seems this way when she's interviewed, Julie Dawn Cole, totally charming, nice girl, wasn't spoiled at all. The real problem was the kid who played Mike TV. In fact, Gene Wilder said, well, I love four of them, but that, you know, Paris Theman of Mike TV, I want to kill him. He literally said that. In fact, at one point he let some wasps loose on the set. He opened a jar that he wasn't supposed to. In fact, when they were doing the pure imagination scene where they see the chocolate room for the first time, which was what was really happening in real life, because the actors had not been exposed to the chocolate room. So they had this wonder and awe. Gene Wilder's walking with the cane, and he accidentally clobbered Paris Theman in the face. And I'm sure it was an accident, but the fact was, of all the kids he would like to have discipline, he was the one. But let me say also that years later they got along fine, even though Gene Wilder recounted that in an interview years later, how much trouble he was.
Then we fast forward from this 40th anniversary of Willy Wonka to the remake, Johnny Depp. When was that? Just a handful of years ago, we're talking about. And that got kind of lukewarm reviews in the beginning.
See, that's the case. You know, Johnny Depp, I think we talked a couple weeks ago about how he almost got fired after Pirates of the Caribbean. During Pirates of the Caribbean. And then after Pirates came out and was a big hit, he really could do whatever he wanted. So he came into the meeting for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and he thought, I'm going to play him like a game show host with a hat and this funny voice that he tried on his daughter. And if the executives at Warner Brothers were worried about his performance, they weren't going to say anything at that point because, you know, he's red hot Johnny Depp now. And so, you know, he and Tim Burton, they respected the book to a certain degree. They back when they made the one in 1971, the book was changed quite a bit, which was why Roald Dahl was so furious. I mean, there was a villain introduced, and the whole, I don't know if people remember the fizzy lifting drink scene, where Charlie and Grandpa Joe drink something they're not supposed to and go flying up in the air. That was all added, and made Roald Dahl furious, and he couldn't understand why Hollywood had the nerve to change things, and because of that he wouldn't allow any of the sequel to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory be made into a movie, Charlie and the Great Glass Elevator. So the Tim Burton one, they made after he died, Roald Dahl died, and in some ways they were more accurate towards the book because they used the actual poems that the Oompa Loompas said in the book, which are very clever and funny, rather than the Oompa Loompa song that you played at the very beginning. But in other ways, they did this whole thing where Willy Wonka is estranged from his father, and of course, you know, that's Hollywood. You know, everybody's on the couch talking about their problems, and they injected that into the movie. So I don't know if Roald Dahl would have liked that so much.
Yeah, no kidding. Stephen Shohead, always a pleasure to have you on the show. HollywoodStories.com, right? That's where people can go and catch some of your stuff.
That's right, and the book is called Hollywood Stories, Short Entertaining Anecdotes About the Stars and Legends of the Movies, and it's available everywhere, and the website is HollywoodStories.com.
All right, Stephen, we'll talk to you again next week.
You got it, Kate.
Thanks. I still like that song, the Oompa song. It's just, it sticks in your head, especially when you're a kid. And as we were just discussing there, the movie really hit its stride more in the late 70s rather than when it first came out. It's interesting how movie tastes maybe have changed somewhat, too. And you think of movies made in the 60s compared to certainly what we're seeing now. Avatar, I mean, how much money did Avatar make? Crazy amounts of money. I want to say it's like $760 million was what the Avatar take was. And James Cameron with the movie that he said he had in his head for such a long time. And then ironically, another big box office movie, which couldn't be more different, was The Titanic. And that movie raked in, I want to say, over $600 million. And that's one of the top grossing movies of all time, which is why he can make his pet projects. But those two movies don't have that much in common. And then you go to the dark side of a franchise that I liked and would go and see the second it came out. I guess it's because when I was a kid, I got so hooked into it. And I think some of you guys can relate to this. You know, we see these comic book remakes and whatnot. And I was always a huge fan of the Batman. So when The Dark Knight came out, I knew it would be a much different twist in this installment. And certainly it was. Heath Ledger was brilliant. And it is one of the top box office earners too. You know, $533 million. So you see that the threat of what the big movies are now are a little bit different in the genres, even when it comes to animated films like Shrek, because Shrek was such a big hit. And it was a movie that was a home run with kids and adults. It was like when I was talking about Cars 2, how you go to see it and you'd watch it with a small child, and you watch it with an adult, and they get the sarcasm in it. So Shrek, $436 million. And then, you know, the throwback movie, E.T. The first time I saw E.T., do you know that I had to watch it in Spanish? And let's just say my Spanish was así, así. I was really trying to grasp what was going on in the movie, and then I eventually saw it in English. I was living in Spain, and that's why I saw it in Spanish. E.T., E.T., people were screaming at the screen. Wow. Coming up next, we're talking with Jeff Atticott about Afghanistan.
Never buy home canning jar lids again. No kidding. When you buy Tadler reusable canning lids once, you'll never buy canning lids ever again. Safely store emergency preparedness foods for years. Traditional metal lids are single-use throwaways containing BPA. But Tadler reusable canning lids are guaranteed to last a lifetime when used as designed for home canning. Tadler lids are made with a USDA and FDA-approved food-grade plastic, safe for direct food contact, and contain no BPA. Tadler lids are dishwasher safe, usable with standard pressure or water bath canning, eliminate food spoilage from acid corrosion, fit standard mason jars, are indefinitely reusable, and are proudly made in the USA. Place orders at reusablecanninglids.com or call 1-877-747-2793, 877-747-2793. Call 877-747-2793 or go to reusablecanninglids.com. That's reusablecanninglids.com for Tadler reusable canning lids, the original since 1976.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN. Great talk radio starts here.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved, guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
The American people think they live in a constitutional republic. Land of the free, home of the brave. Right.
Just try those lines on the judge when you get a ticket or have to deal with a big bad IRS.
Instead, use escapeharassment.com. Since 1972, our volunteer group of researchers and educators have successfully taught how to escape tickets by law, and it works. Escape harassment has three different steps to follow, depending on where you are in the ticket process. Learn how to escape tickets, IRS, or court proceedings before you go to court. For free, three-minute pre-recorded information and FAQs, call this toll-free number, 1-877-45 9009. That's 877-457-9009. Or go to escapeharassment.com and see our money back guarantee. That's escapeharassment.com. Remember, escape harassment works.
Welcome back to America Tonight. Afghanistan and what the future strategy will be as far as this administration, that's the big topic that everybody's buzzing about. We know, we talked about it on a previous show, and of course, Wednesday night is when the president will address this. There's been a lot of conversation as to what the blueprint is, how long it's going to take for the drawdown of the troops, et cetera, a lot of different angles on Afghanistan, including if it was a mission accomplished kind of thing. Terrorism expert Jeff Atticott joins us. It's always a pleasure to have him on the show and pick his brain about this kind of stuff. Jeff, thanks for spending some time with us.
Oh, always a pleasure, Kate.
So initially your reaction to, okay, the polls have been pretty negative about the wars, Afghanistan and then Iraq, the carryover from Iraq, saying that people are weary of the money that's being spent and all that. Now you've got a big election year coming up. The president wants to be reelected. Now, boom, suddenly, here we go with Afghanistan, time to get our ducks in a row. I think that kind of lit the torch there a little bit maybe earlier than a lot of the commanders thought would actually happen. But what have you heard as far as the drawdown, and what was your initial reaction?
Well, basically, the morale for U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan is at its lowest point ever. A recent poll came out and just reflected that the soldiers there know that this is a political game, that they know that we haven't won anything. They know that they're being asked to sacrifice their lives, perhaps, in the name of what? Because now we're told we're leaving, and yet the president's never defined what victory was in Afghanistan. Once when he was asked, how do you define victory in Afghanistan, he said, I'm not comfortable with that term. So the troops get it. I mean, they know, as our soldiers in Vietnam knew, that there is no there's no milestone here for victory, and we kind of figured that out when Obama said he's sending in the 35,000-40,000 additional troops. In the same breath, he said, and we're pulling them out next year. Of course, he's bumped that up now until he's going to make some token withdrawals now. But nobody believes, really, that whether we pull them out in 10 years from now or 5 years from now or 1 year from now, that anything is going to change. The Taliban, Afghanistan itself, is a medieval culture, society that's fractured, and you're simply not going to turn that country into a stable democracy. It's never going to happen. I don't know anybody that really believes that. Sure, we can keep the lid on as long as our soldiers are on the ground. We cannot be defeated militarily, but when we leave, we've lost, and that's what disturbs me, is that we're heading for defeat. And President Obama is playing a shell game to try to hold on to the 2012 elections. He doesn't want to pull out too many, because the country then would have even more turmoil, and he'd come under criticism. But, of course, he has to pull out some soldiers, because the folks on the left are very upset with him for putting soldiers in there. So no one's really happy with him. People on the right, conservatives, are wondering what we're doing here, what he's doing with these soldiers. And people on the left, of course, are upset because they didn't want to have anything to do with any increase in our military anywhere.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thanks for hitting up the finer points for sure. You and I have talked about Pakistan since I started talking to you. Probably now this has been 2 years. What's the move while this happens in Afghanistan? What should the move be with Pakistan?
Well, we spent billions of dollars in Pakistan. The relationship is not going to get any better. It kind of is a strained relationship from day one, and day one I take from 9/11. And they've been playing both sides of the fence. They know that the Taliban and Al Qaeda are reconstituted in western Pakistan, and they are simply not willing to go in and root them out. And they have a society that really is not monolithic at all. The military has done coups in the past. They hold a lot of power. You have a fragile civilian, quote-unquote, government. You have a large minority of the population are infected with the virus of radical Islam. It's a country that is has many different angles and facets to it. And again, people are saying, why are we spending all this money? For what? And we just saw recently that the military announced that they're going to take any future drone attacks in Pakistan is a sign that basically that we're at war with Pakistan, and it's a nightmare. You cannot conduct foreign policy the way this administration has been doing it. You can't nuance these types of things. You're not dealing with democracies. You're dealing with people that understand only one thing: the application of violence or the threat of the application of violence. That's what they respect. And the same in Afghanistan. I mean, as I said before, we have an opportunity to emerge victorious in Afghanistan, and that psychological spirit, if you will flow over into Pakistan if the president announced that we're going to take everything out of Afghanistan almost immediately within 90 days, leave us a little bit there, because we've accomplished our mission. President Bush closed down the terror training camps, and now under President Obama, we've killed Osama bin Laden. It's time to leave. And those that say, the whole country will go back to being a hotbed of terrorism. Well, if it does, then we come back and close down the terror camps again and then withdraw again. We cannot turn that country into a democracy. It's simply not going to happen.
I'm glad you said that. Call us now, everybody listening. You know exactly what Jeff's talking about, 800-259-5791. How about this? We're going to jump over to Libya. Senators McCain and John Kerry pleading for support for a resolution that they've come together on, authorizing more U.S. involvement in NATO's Libya campaign. What do you think about that?
Well, again, the president has the legal authority to conduct war in Libya. And this nonsense that he's saying, it's not really war, therefore I don't have to invoke the War Powers Resolution. Yeah, it really is war, Mr. President. We're spending, by September, we're going to spend $1 billion. We are shooting at them. They're shooting at us. They're not using sophisticated weapons. We're killing soldiers. We're killing civilians. We're using, weapons. It is a war. The president has the authority, though, to conduct war in the Constitution, Article 2. He's the commander-in-chief. But this idea, we've been essentially not told the truth from day one. The president said we're not taking sides, and then we're playing a secondary role. One, we are taking sides. We're trying to kill Muammar Gaddafi. And number two, we're not taking a secondary role. Please stop the madness. NATO is a puppet shell. We are NATO, and the vast majority of military activity is being conducted and supplied and funded by the United States of America. That's not a secondary role. But the president's got us into this mess, and it is a war. Therefore, we've got to emerge victorious. We're going to have to kill Gaddafi and, and you know, hope that a regime that takes over is better than what he had, but there's no guarantees on that. But we've got to kill him because now that we're in, we cannot be defeated. Same thing in Iraq. I was opposed to going into Iraq when George Bush wanted to do it, but once we went in, I was a very strong advocate for not leaving until we're victorious. We were victorious in Iraq. We left a stable country. We're not going to be victorious in Afghanistan, and we have to be victorious in Libya. We have to stay there until we kill Gaddafi.
Yeah, and there, and of course, after the Osama bin Laden was taken out, which was huge, but then the conversation, as you know, especially to the left, Jeff, turns to, well, we can't just go around assassinating people, but why, oh, why don't they just take Gaddafi out? I don't understand.
Well, they're trying. I mean, they've killed civilians. They've killed. They bombed civilian compounds. They've, you know, we've killed his grandchildren. We're trying to kill him. And I wish the president would say that. I mean, you know, he parses words. It's, oh no, we're not trying to take sides, and we're protecting civilians. We're killing civilians, Mr. President, and that's fine. I mean, that's what happens in wars. We don't intentionally target them, but yeah, we're killing civilians. And of course, this idea that we're protecting civilians in the first instance, far more civilians are being slaughtered in Syria. And not a peep from Obama about Syria.
Yeah, that just left off the table. It just fell off the table, I agree. And it's crazy what's happening there. Absolutely. Now we have a new defense chief, and this time it's Leon Panetta, who moves from the CIA into this role that Robert Gates is vacating. What do you think about Panetta in this position?
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, the president has got some good people around him that have come from previous administrations. Panetta is respected by both sides as a level-headed person that doesn't play politics. He's more dedicated to what's good for this country than what's good for, you know, one political party or the other. So that's a breath of fresh air. He has locked horns with Obama in the past over other issues. So I think he'll do well. He's a voice of stability. And I have every confidence that he'll do a good job. He's done a good job at the CIA. And now, of course, Petraeus is being pulled out of Afghanistan, and he'll do a good job in the role of the CIA director. But that means that now in Afghanistan, we're back without our strongest military leaders being pulled out at a time when we desperately need him to stay in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and as everything is starting to unfold, which is where we first started this conversation, how many troops were coming out, you mentioned the morale, and that was a big reason for what's happening there. The morale is so, so low. Jeff, one of the saddest things, I think, is the statistic that I think I read 18 soldiers a day after they come home are killing themselves, committing suicide. They can't handle what they saw.
Yeah, you know, in every war, I mean, even in peacetime, we have soldiers committing suicide. I've been in the military for 20 years, and we have people at Fort Bragg, and there was an epidemic where five or six would kill themselves here and there, and people wonder what happened. In a very large military, we have X number of people that are unstable, and we have people that commit crimes, that commit suicide, and, you know, the numbers, if you do a cross comparison, looking at civilians in that same age group, we have a lot of teenagers, of course, that commit suicide for various reasons in this country that aren't in the military, but a lot of people try to tie it to this, you know, stress issue. I think more studies need to be done about it. It is stressful. We need harder training for our soldiers. I think part of the problem is we engage in social engineering in our military and not concentrate on teaching these young men on how to kill people. And if you don't do that, then it creates a lot of unnecessary stress. So we've seen a lot of, social engineering in the military. We need strong trigger pullers that when they sleep at night, they have a very soft pillow because they don't worry about, you know, killing people. So I'm not really too impressed with the numbers on suicide rates.
Yeah, good point, actually, and some of the things that you pointed out there. It would behoove us to certainly study that a lot closer. All right, Jeff Atticott, thanks so much, as always, for joining us on ATN.
Thanks, Kate.
Will I have garlic breath after I take Ali-C?
We get that question all the time about the world's best garlic extract, Ali-C. And the answer is, Ali-C contains stabilized allicin, nature's antimicrobial agent, and the active ingredient in crushed garlic, but will not give you garlic breath. Scientifically proven in double-blind studies, using low doses of allicin greatly reduces the number, severity, and duration of common colds. Our powerful Ali-C contains 300 milligrams of stabilized allicin. Just one tablet of Ali-C is equivalent to 40 Early Garlic Cloves. It's effective against asthma, MRSA, bacterial, fungal, and viral infections, and helps lower high blood pressure and high cholesterol. Plus, it's a natural mosquito repellent. Boosts resistance to infection with nature's best garlic extract, Ali-C. For more information and to order Ali-C, call 877-888-7126 or go to garlichealthproducts.com. That's 877-888-7126 or garlichealthproducts.com. Fight back with Ali-C.
What would you do with a check for $25,000? What if you could eliminate all of your credit card debt in 90 days and keep all of your money? Hi, I'm Jason Davenport, and I've just completed ZeroDebt100.com, a program that stops and prevents debt collections of all kinds, including debt collectors and foreclosures, with guaranteed results. Forget loan modification. Zero Debt showed me how to get the banks to pay my property taxes and insurance while stopping my foreclosure without paying one dime. An attorney tried to garnish my wages, but the court denied his request because of what I found from the Zero Debt program. Find out how I did this by calling Zero Debt today at 800-477-9256. Tell them Jason sent you and ask for the Zero Debt special and the free bonus promotion about stopping an IRS levy and getting your money back. Tell them Jason sent you and call 800-477-9256. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256 or visit www.zerodebt100.com.
How well and how fast does Heart and Body Extract work to improve blood circulation? Listen.
My name is Ellis, and I am 66 years old, and I live in Jacksonville, Florida. 2 years ago, I was diagnosed as having clogged arteries. I had 70% blockage in one artery leading to my heart. They wanted me to go on Plavix, but I refused, knowing the negative side effects.
Heart and Body Extract is a unique balance, synergy, and proportion of herbs reaching from head to toe at maximum absorption around 95% at the cellular level.
Within the first month, I felt a dramatic difference. The heaviness in my legs was reduced, and within 2 months, I felt completely normal.
Your natural organic herbal formula for heart health is Heart and Body Extract. Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract. Call 866-295-5305, 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
The eyes of the world are on England right now. The country is hosting the professional tennis tournament that boasts not only the uniform wearing of white, but the popular treat of strawberries and cream. That's next on Sports Shorts with me, the Sports Princess.
This Your Family Today tip is brought to you by Boost Kit Essentials Nutritionally Complete Drink, providing your picky eater with essential nutrition and great taste in one drink. Visit us at kitessentials.com. To make sure your kids eat healthy, follow the 5-a-day plan. Serve 3 servings of vegetables and 2 servings of fruit daily. Remember, a serving could just mean a piece of fruit or a half cup of veggies. If your kids are picky eaters, ask a nutritionist about other sources. For more tips like these, visit us at parenthood.com/yourfamilytoday.
For 2 weeks, both the men and the women compete at the All England Lawn Tennis and Croquet Club in what is considered to be the premier professional event in tennis. Unique to this Grand Slam is its surface, grass. The first event was held in 1877, limited to just men. 22 gentlemen competed, and fans paid $1 at the time to watch. The man who won was an amateur, Spencer Gore, as was everybody, until the open era in 1968. The lawns are arranged so there is a center court surrounded by all the other courts. Pete Sampras loves center court. He won 7 times. Roger Federer can claim 6. For the ladies, Martina Navratilova won 9 times, and current defending champ for the ladies, Serena Williams, has won it 4 times. The longest match of all time, though, was last year when John Isner beat Nicholas Mahut. They played for 11 hours and 5 minutes. Even the fans were exhausted. I'm the Sports Princess for Sports Shorts. Can you imagine? I still can't imagine being on a court for 11 hours and 5 minutes. Isner and Mahut, that's exactly what happened. I watched a big chunk of that match, and they did. They looked like they were sagging bodies with rackets in their hands toward the tail end of that. I would have hated to be on the losing side. Interestingly enough, what was heavily anticipated was a rematch of these two gentlemen, and sure enough, that did happen at Wimbledon. We're in the early rounds, you know, the first round and then into the second round. Some of the first round had to be re-racked because they had some rain problems, even with the roof that they have, the retractable roof. So a lot of the action got pushed back. the talk is really about Serena Williams, and Serena Williams got by in three sets and got through the first round. But there was a rematch of Isner and Mahut, and it was a very hot ticket, to say the least, for the rematch. And easily John Isner whips through that one. So it wasn't much of a rematch compared to what they had the previous year at Wimbledon. Speaking of sports, since we've dove into it here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney, the NFL, I said at the very top of the show that we would talk about this. The NFL is really down to the tail end of the where the training camps would start. At this point, yes, you have players who are organizing workouts and doing all the kind of things that they, some of them anyway, they could do to keep in shape. But it's not the same, particularly not the same for rookies. If you've ever seen an NFL playbook, good luck. I don't care if you played football in high school and some college ball and whatever. You have to know the idiosyncrasies of a quarterback, of the linemen around you, what the play calling consists of. And so all that is out the window at this point. And then the question becomes, will we see football or not? Now, with the owners' meetings, supposedly both sides are proclaiming that they're not close, but they're getting closer. They're at least talking about it. And one of the things that's happening is they're looking at a new way to divvy up the money, a new model, a new revenue model, if you will. So a couple of the comments coming out of the meetings included Jim Irsay and Roger Goodell, of course, the commissioner of the NFL, and Bob Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots. Here's a little snippet of that.
It's a tremendous positive that the principals are talking. You know, players and owners are talking to one another, negotiating, and I think that's a positive step. And hopefully we'll all be successful and reach an agreement that's fair and balanced for everybody. We don't have an agreement. We have, I think, a very strong view of the priorities, a very strong view of what we need to continue to accomplish in the negotiations, and a determination to get there. And I think the ownership is unified on that basis.
It just makes sense to continue, you know, to have a feeling of urgency and to work to try to get something done. So, you know, that's my hope. But these things are tough, they're fragile, and there's, you know, that's the reason I think you just got to keep working at it.
But I don't think it was anything that was, you know, overly shocking or any controversy or whatever you want to call it. It was more of just an update and knowing that we got to keep working at it.
It's good that things seem to be moving. But there's a lot of hard work to do.
A lot of hard work by the people who work so hard to be able to afford to go to a game, or this is just the one moment that they get a chance to chill, the pure fans of whatever team they root for, whether it's the New York Giants, the Dallas Cowboys, the Indianapolis Colts, the Baltimore Ravens, the Minnesota Vikings, whoever your favorite team is, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So I've said this tongue-in-cheek, but I really mean it. You should definitely start thinking about what are you going to do with those Sundays? What are you going to do with NFL gone? Looking forward to those Thursday night games even, those Sunday night games. Forget about it. Matt, it's depressing to think of because we've been talking about the NFL and the tug of war between the owners and the players now for months, for like 6 months.
We have, but at the same time, I think you and I have always maintained that we think there's still going to be a season. And I think with what's happened the last week, it's heading more towards that direction. They got the lawyers out of the room, it sounds like, and there's just people kind of talking business with each other and really trying to hammer out a deal. And I think if one is done within the next week, they can almost start on time, too, so we won't be missing any other games.
That would be great if that happened. I mean, honestly, here on America Tonight, all of you who have listened in the past know we do a really cool thing called Nail the Score. You don't even have to know football to jump in on this, and the phone lines are jammed, and it's a whole lot of fun, and it'd be very strange to have no football. Even, you know, we started off talking about Afghanistan. We just were with Jeff Atticott. and the troops being weary, tired, exhausted from this whole thing, one of the highlights for the troops was watching the football games. You know, in the Super Bowl, when you're watching the Super Bowl, and cut to the shots of the guys screaming and yelling who were rooting for whoever to win. And we've seen that year after year after year. Football is a definite highlight when you're in the middle of one of the wars, whether it's Afghanistan or the carryover from Iraq. Absolutely. I also said that we were going to mention this, so I want to make sure we do. The situation with the TSA and now what's happening in two states, Michigan and Texas, both states are trying to press for a law, kind of what we've called a no-grope law, meaning it'll be a criminalized act if somebody is considered to be groped at the airports. So a $4,000 fine, possibly, this is Texas anyway, $4,000 fine, possibly a year in prison. And the TSA, Homeland Security, they're not even worried about it because they figure they'll just slam this down and they're going to let these states try and pass some kind of a law and then go after them. The one thing that would be tough is the enforcement of what's happening at the airports, because even though you've got flip video and cameras and all of that, I guess that's what would have to happen if somebody, if a kid or a young child, in other words, baby, whatever, or an adult went through and that was happening, somebody would have to film it. You'd have to know the person's name and you'd have to send it in. But I love the fact that it's being challenged. And we go from that to what I said that's interesting is the possibility of searches, not just at the airport, but at bus terminals and in train terminals. Can you imagine? Has anyone ever commuted in a major metropolitan area? Oh, forget about it. The last time, in fact, I just did this a few weeks ago, got out of a car, got a ticket, got on the train with everybody else who was commuting from New Jersey into Manhattan. And I can't even imagine what a nightmare that would be like if they decided they were going to have these screenings to get people onto those modes of transportation, including ferry boats, too. So I have to think that there have been some kind of threats that have ramped up. I'm just thinking, is it about policing it and more control, or is it about threats and concern? I don't know. You be the judge.
Hey, if you don't like America, then you can get out.
You will respect my authority.